This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. As you've probably heard, the legislature overwhelmingly passed the state budget. Unanimous approval in the 30-member Senate, and there were only 14 naysayers in the ranks of 150 state representatives. But that's not the end. The governor has promised to not approve any tax hikes, and the budget includes increased property taxes because of school budget increases. So a veto appears inevitable. But a veto override also seems like a distinct possibility. So, what happens next? Well, we've got VPR Statehouse reporter Peter Hirschfeld with us now to go over the possibilities. I'm really glad you're here, Pete. Welcome.
Great to be with you, Jane.
So, what are the major disagreements between this budget and the plan that the governor put forward?
You know, it really all boils down to a fundamental philosophical break between lawmakers and Phil Scott over whether it's okay to spend money now under the assumption that you're going to be able to pay that money back later. And I'll explain how that's coming to play right now. Phil Scott wants to use $58 million in one-time money to buy down property tax rates next year to keep them flat. He's been promising since he began his gubernatorial campaign in 2015 that he'd be the governor of no tax increases, no fee increases. But based on the school budgets that local voters approved back in March, property tax rates are in fact set to go up in order to accommodate the spending increases that voters approved. Phil Scott says, hey, we got a lot of money this year. It's a banner year for revenues. We have some tobacco settlement money, some budget surpluses we didn't expect. We can take this money just this once, and we have enough to offset that tax increase. And he says, and we can pay that money back next year and the year after that, because we have some education reforms that are starting to take effect that are going to result in reduced expenditures in public schools, and we can account for those savings now and thereby promise to pay it all back. Lawmakers just aren't willing to put a number on those education savings or assume as a matter of budgetary practice that they'll actually materialize. And they say if you spend this one-time money now and those savings don't materialize, then Vermont suddenly is going to find itself with a real severe structural deficit in the education fund.
Nonetheless, you know, so the governor has said, I'm not going to do this. And you can see where he's coming from. But, you know, it doesn't seem like the legislature is giving him any room for that, because the budget passed with broad tripartisan support. It was really interesting to see many Republicans voting in favor of this budget. You know, ordinarily you'd expect Republicans to align a little bit more with their party governor, you know, in saying, hey, these tax increases are too much. And yet in this case, it sort of seemed like a rebuke of the governor.
You know, that's one way to read it. I'm not sure that budget vote is necessarily a proxy for where the Republican minorities in the House and Senate generally stand when it comes to whether or not they're with the governor or they're against him. The practical reality is a lot of them voted for this budget because it has some great stuff in it for their local communities, right? You don't want to have to go home and explain why you voted against a budget that has more money for local roads or more money for the community Meals on Wheels programs. And a lot of those yes votes from the Republicans don't necessarily mean that they oppose what he wants to do. That said,
But then looking at the politics of this, Pete, that suggests that those programs are more important to the voters than decreasing the taxes, considering that they already voted for their school budgets.
They see there were far more no votes from Republicans on the tax bill, and that's where they see the interplay there. Mm. So the governor has kind of linked the budget in the tax bill, because the practical reality is you need to rearrange the budget in order to make the numbers in the tax bill work so that you don't have a property tax increase.
Right.
You know, to this issue of Republicans who did vote no against the budget, who voted for the budget, some of them really do have some grave concerns about the governor's reliance on one-time money to execute this plan. They're wary of using one-time money, and that's because in the past, one-time money has been used to shore up shortfalls in ongoing expenses and in ongoing programs. And the problem is when that one-time money isn't there again the next year, the purpose for which it had been allocated is suddenly in need of an infusion. And people in a lot of cases have come to rely on that program or that service that the one-time money was used for. And if you want to keep paying for it, now you have to find money from somewhere else in the budget or raise revenues to make it happen. So they are very wary of going down this road where you create an expectation and a reliance that something is going to be there that you just don't have the money for the next year. And if you don't have the money to pay these rates down again next year, then suddenly you find yourselves with this property tax rate shock. That a lot of people feel like you might be worse off then than you would have been otherwise.
So right now, then, we're at a standoff. The legislature has said yes to the budget. The governor is still saying no. So he hasn't officially vetoed it yet. What are the next steps?
So the next step is the governor is going to call lawmakers back to Montpelier for a special session. I talked to his chief of staff today, and he said that'll probably happen on Monday or Tuesday. The governor is sending a letter to House Speaker Mitzi Johnson and Senate President Tim Ash later this afternoon. He's going to invite them to a series of informal one-on-ones this week to try to lay the groundwork for a deal next week. And we'll begin to see very shortly here sort of the tenor and tone of those conversations.
Can you explain the procedural differences between a special session and a veto session then?
Yeah. So in a special session, it's a blank slate. You start from scratch. Anything that's taken up has to be newly introduced during that session. During a veto session, you're taking up exclusively bills that have been vetoed by the governor to try to override them, presumably. So there's a reason that lawmakers have chosen to not schedule a veto session and instead require the governor to call them back for a special session. And a lot of that has to do with vote counts that are needed to pass something. You need a two-thirds majority to override a veto, right? And so that means if Scott vetoes the budget and they hold a veto session, they're going to need 100 votes in the House and 20 in the Senate in order to get another affirmative vote on a budget plan. If they have a special session, it's just like any other bill. All they need is a simple majority. And in some ways, it prevents them from being held hostage by the Republican minority. And if we find ourselves days or hours away from the fiscal year expiring and there's still no budget deal, lawmakers can simply pass their own budget or a version of it, and then it's on Phil Scott to veto it. And it allows lawmakers to get just a little bit more creative with vote counts and optics than they would otherwise be able to be.
It looks, though, from the votes like they would have had a veto-proof majority. So why have the special session instead of, as you said, going ahead with the veto session, since it looks like from their original votes they'd have the votes?
Because the decision of how to vote on that bill is impacted by a number of different dynamics. And were it a matter of forcing Democrats to go back to the table with Phil Scott and work out a deal so that you don't have any tax increase, that would be a new variable in the equation for a lot of these Republicans that would compel them to rethink those yes votes.
What are the chances, though, now of getting to a compromise, do you think?
Oh, I mean, I think it's likely, right? Like what's harder to imagine is us finding ourselves counting down the seconds to midnight on June 30th and them still having nothing in place in Vermont, staring down at a government shutdown. That to me seems more unbelievable than these folks getting together and working out a deal. How long is it going to take? Who knows? They certainly haven't been talking very much lately. The relationship is not in great repair right now. But you have to imagine that necessity will bring them to a place that they haven't otherwise been able to get to.
No, interesting to hear you say the governor is calling for some informal sessions with Senate and House leaders, given that it doesn't appear that he had any of those in the week leading up to the end of the legislative session.
Nope. And House Speaker Mitzi Johnson and Senate President Tim Ash will tell you that that's because Phil Scott didn't make himself available or invite them. And the administration, of course, will tell you that's because they canceled all their meetings. So.
Well, it remains to be seen what will happen, and Peter Hirschfeld will be certainly covering all of it. Pete, we thank you for your insight on what's happening with the budget today.
Thanks, Jane.